Okay, hello everybody. Well, it's my pleasure today is to finally get down to business. So we're all experts in Mathematica, and we're going to be implementing one of the, I mean, this is a really great learning exercise and also a useful tool to have in your repository. We'll see that the recursion relations that we'll do today are, should be more intuitive, and also intuitively clear, simple to do, and also have the advantage of being much faster than anything that you can find currently available on the archive, just as a bonus. And what we're really going to be implementing, so I'm going to try to, the first, when I get to the computer in just a moment, when I finish writing the formula, I'll try to give you an idea of what the formula is, but I know we haven't derived it. So you can just take the attitude that, you know, your advisor told you that, you know, there's this concise, simple formula for all three amplitudes in n equals 4, and they, you know, he or she wants you to implement this in Mathematica, because certainly it must be simple, because it's an easy equation. And so we're going to treat this as just, you know, I'm not going to derive it, although it's really easy to derive. I don't really have time for it. But what I'd like is just as a practical implementation of this formula. Today, we're going to implement this entirely symbolically, and we should finish the recursion relations completely. And then the next lecture, the last lecture, will be extracting component amplitudes out of this formula, the formulas that we get today. So just to, you know, this is, should be review, but the an end of the KMHV amplitude is written, is just equal to the one lower point amplitude with dropping one particle, and plus the sum over this, over all these partitions, where this is going from, so J hat, ZJ plus 1, or ZJ, ZN minus 1, and ZN hat. Okay, and it's worth, we'll put these in detail in a moment, but so ZJ hat is defined to be the twister such that it's at the intersection of the line JJ minus 1 with the plane N minus 1, N1. And ZN hat is defined almost identically. It's N, it's the twister along the line NN minus 1, where it intersects the plane J minus 1, J1. Okay? Now, if I have time today, I hope I do, I'll be able to tell you how to solve all sorts of geometric problems of this variety. All projective geometry problems amount to one universal formula, which is very easy to prove, it's really easy to get a lot of intuition and power out of this. So these formulas shouldn't be intimidating, but if I don't get to it, we'll just treat it symbolically, which is a good attitude. So if you don't we're going to really break this down into pieces which are pretty manageable. We're going to first do it completely symbolically, and then we're going to talk about what these R's are. Of course, you already know because we've seen them in several lectures already. But here we're just going to treat them symbolically, and we'll see how to expand them and treat them, you know, to evaluate numerical expressions or even get analytic formulas, and just in terms of four brackets, pretty straightforward. You know, towards the end of the lecture, beginning of the next time. Okay, so I wanted to start off with just this brief animation, and the rest, most of it will be not animations, but just to give you an idea of what's going on in the BCFW recursion relations in momentum twisters. So as Dave summarized really well last night, you know that the momentum twisters are just some arbitrary points in C4. And because they have this rescaling symmetry, you can treat them as points in P3, which means that you can visualize them in very nice ways. So what we're starting off with is just a bunch of random twisters. You know, they're just some, you know, in 3 space, just some random points. But they're a little bit more special than that. They're ordered. They're ordered, they form some closed loop, and in particular, they have labels. So one, I'm imagining this loop goes on for a long ways, and then eventually it hits J, goes to J plus 1, and then goes on for a while longer, and N minus 1. And the BCFW shift that you normally do in terms of shifting a lambda and a lambda tilde is much easier to implement in momentum twisters because momentum conservation is manifest. And because of that, the shift is really trivial. You just shift N, the momentum twister N, along the line NN minus 1. And so the BCFW shift is to hat n there and to slide it along this line, nn minus 1. Okay? And so n is going to be sliding along this line, n hat. And where does it stop? Where do the terms in the BCFW recursion come from? They come from when it hits a plane like this. So this is the plane 1j, j plus 1. And when n hits that plane, something very nice happens. So this is, notice that these two, you know, so there's a nice line between n hat and 1, and it intersects line jj plus 1. And because of that, we can define a new particle j, capital J, which is this j hat here. Now notice that this j hat is as I wrote it up there, it is the point where the plane n, the plane n hat n minus 1, 1 is the same as the plane n minus 1, 1. And so j hat is at the place where jj plus 1 intersects that plane. And, okay. Now, when we define the j hat, the j in the middle, something very nice happens. Because remember, the closed loop of twisters is what gave you a momentum-conserving set of external data. And so when we have, when we define the extra j in the middle, there, notice that we've broken apart the single loop into two loops. So there's a consecutive ring from 1 through J to capital J. That defines an entire closed set of momenta, which is going to be the left amplitude in the recursion relations. And then from capital J through J plus 1 all the way to N hat and back, it forms another set for the right-hand amplitude. And then the P squared that you get in the residue formula is going to be this R invariant. And you'll see that it really is doing all the work. And the reason why is because in the BCFW recursions, you're going to eventually hit, eventually you're going to break all the amplitudes down to MHV amplitudes times Rs. And the MHV amplitudes in momentum twisters are just 1. And because of that, they just kind of disappear at that point. And the Rs are the only things that survive, which is why the NMHV amplitude is just going to be a sum of Rs. And for N squared MHV, it's going to be sums of products of Rs. And so K in this formula is counting the degree of N to the K MHV. And I think we're about ready to go. Okay, so let me briefly give you an outline, and then we'll just dig right in. So this is the formula. It's the same as written on the board, hopefully. And I've given a formula for what these hatted variables are, but we'll prove them in at the end of the lecture or at the beginning of the next one, depending on how much time I've got. But this, so the general strategy is to really take this in a piece by piece approach. We want to do break the problem of implementing this formula. I mean, it's just some simple formula that we want to implement in Mathematica, and we want to break it up into lots of little problems that are easy to solve. So the first one that's going to be easy to solve is I'm actually going to do your exercise 2-1 or 2-A for you here, which is we just need to find the partitions. You know, this is of course, you know, it's essentially a trivial problem, but it's a really good organizational first step. Because the sums, we need to make sure that K is never less than 0, and also that it's never greater than N minus 4. Because the N squared MHV 6-point amplitude, for example, or the NMHV 5-point amplitude is MHV bar. So K can't be any greater than N minus 4. And so we want to basically just generate all the terms that will appear in the sum. Because that'll give us something to feed this bridge over later. Okay, so we're going to break it up into, that's the first step. And then we're going to define the bridge, and then we're going to use a replacement rule to do the recursions for us. Okay, so let's start off with the with BCFW partitions. So partitions across the bridge. Now, it's what we're looking for here, now notice that the constraints that we have here is that n, the total n for the problem, is equal to n left plus n right, which is just part of the formula, right, minus 2. And then we have, I'm not going to actually evaluate any of this, so it doesn't, I don't need to use a double or single equals or anything. But k is then k left plus k right plus 1. Okay, and what I... And the structure, you could choose any structure you'd like, and if you're doing this yourself, I'd expect you, and I mean, you probably should choose your own favorite structure. The one that I like is, so I want to generate a list of the following form, n left and k left, and N right and K right. Okay, for all the possible things that can occur across this bridge. So this is the kind of thing that I want it to be ranged over. And so first attempt would be very nice. We just use a table. Okay. So the table, let's use N right as our variable. So we can say N right goes from 4 to N minus 1. Okay. And we want K right to go from 0 to N right minus 4. So that's its bounds. K right can only go from 0 to N minus 4. Now, of course, if we evaluate this, it's going to yell at us. It's just started up the kernel. But it's yelling at us because tables need to be explicit, and we haven't given any values for N. So a nice way of doing this when you're programming dynamically is whenever you have a variable that you need that's going to be a parameter of the function that you're going to define, it's useful to do something like with. You could use block or something, too. But this works great. So you just use, let's just do 8-point n squared MHV as our test case. Okay, so we'll say that n is equal to 8 and k equals 2. Okay, now we've done this. We've gotten a bunch of terms, but notice, well, we didn't do anything with n left and k left. So let's use the relations that we have there for the partitions. And n left is just equal to n minus n right plus 2. And k left is just k minus k right minus 1. Okay. So we've got our partitions. But if you notice, you know, if you look, a moment's glance, we'll see that although the right-hand amplitudes have all been correctly, they're all good amplitudes, they don't vanish, we have things like this n to the minus 2 MHV 3-point amplitude over here, and the n to the minus 1 MHV 4-point amplitude, which definitely aren't generically non-vanishing. And so we want to get rid of those. Another problem is that notice that the structure is that I don't have a list of the sets that I want. So we can fix that really quickly. That's just because the table has two iterators. And so I'll wrap this in a flatten one. And now I've got a list of things that I like. Now the test that we want to do, we want to have a function which tests this. So I don't want to define a permanent function because we don't need to. So let's say that a function n left and k left. All it's going to do is just test whether or not n left and k left are legal. Okay? And this is, which is basically that 0 is less than or equal to k left, which is less than or equal to n left minus 4. Okay? Now that's actually not quite good enough. Maybe we can implement it and see what we're missing. Yeah, let's do that. So I want to choose from this list of objects all the things which satisfy this criterion, and we'll quickly see that this is not a good enough criterion, but or rather it's too strong. Okay, so this is one of my favorite functions that I mentioned yesterday. Select it should be a very good friend of yours. It's it picks things out of a list. It applies a test to every element in the list and pulls out everything that satisfies true. And in fact, actually, select has another really useful thing when you're trying to like scan for counterexamples, is that if you give it another argument, so I'm going to put the test in here, this function, but if we put out another argument, if we put in another argument of like 1, it'll stop when it hits the first example, which is really good for finding count if you're testing a conjecture. But we don't need that now. We really just want all of them. Okay, so we do this. Oh, that didn't work. Of course, we're not applying it to anything. Okay. So we want to apply this to the left amplitude on each side. So that's what I'm going to do. And now we get these four terms. Can anybody tell me which one I'm missing? Which one should be there and isn't there? It might require some familiarity with BCFW, but no big deal. So the criterion that k left is less than or equal to n left minus 4 excludes the three-point function, you know, the MHV three-point function, which is certainly legal. So we want to amend this and say, or n left is equal to 3 and k left is equal to 0. And if we do that, we get all the terms we need. Okay. So we've done this for n equals 8 and k equals 2, but it's clear that we've done this for any n and any k. So now we've got everything we need to define our function. So BCFW partitions n and k is that. Done. first step, that's the first exercise. There's a really nice application of this, which is just kind of neat, and it's an example of the kinds of recursions that we've been seeing many times through the course of the school, which is just to count the number of terms in BCFW. So let's see this. Terms, how big is this recursion going to get? And the reason why we can do this really easily is because we know that that it's just going to be the, well, let's look at one of the things. So BCFW partitions, we can look at, say, 10 point k equals 3. So n equals the 10 point n cubed MHV amplitude. So we've got a lot of partitions across the bridge. Let's just look at one of them. So the first term in the recursion relations is the 8 point n squared MHV amplitude, and then the 4 point MHV amplitude. And, of course, the number of terms this thing is going to break into more terms. It's going to break in the number of terms of the 8-point n squared MHV times the number of terms in the 4-point MHV. And so let's see what that would look like. So terms, so this is an undefined function, which is great. Terms in BCFW. Great. So now we've gotten the terms of the 8-point n squared MHV and the terms in the 4-point MHV. And, of course, we want to multiply them together. So we can do times. And we've just done this for one of the items in the list, but we really want to do this for every one of the things, every one of the partitions we've got. And so that's a great excuse to use map. And we can, so we want to, instead of just doing it on the first item, which, so again, we did it a moment ago for the first item, but we can do it for every item successively by putting a pound sign and then that. Okay. So now it's terms in BCFW for each one of them. Okay, and of course we want to total those. And those are all the terms we're going to get from the bridge. But notice we're missing one of the terms, which is important, which is this the lower point same k amplitude here. So we need to include that as well, separately. Okay, so we pretty much have all the ingredients we need. Terms in BCFW, and we can be clever and have it remember its values, because it's going to be recursive. Terms in BCFW, N and K. And by the way, when you do things like functions that remember their values, you want to make sure you either program it right the first time or that you always put a clear all before you redo it. Because once you've evaluated it and it's stored it to memory, it's there. And you need to explicitly clear it or overwrite it. So, but I think I can do this without any bugs. So, really, the question is whether or not, well, if k equals 0, the number of terms is 1. That's what's going to terminate the k equals 0, or if k is equal to n minus 4. In either of those two cases, then it's either MHV or it's MHV bar, and there's just one term in the BCFW recursion. Okay? And otherwise, so if it's not 1, then it's going to be this formula that we have up here. So let's go ahead and put this in, but not with the percent sign. We want BCFW partitions, N and K. And that's only one of the terms because we still need to also have this other term, the bare term out front, which is the, okay, so that's total plus terms in BCFW for N minus 1 and K, the same K. Okay, so unless I made a mistake, which is quite possible, I think. I want to repeat this thing up here, but for N and K. So let's see. It should give us 20 terms for the 8-point N squared MHV. So 8-point N squared MHV. 20 terms. Great. And if we look up, say, the 14-point K equals 5, or end of the 5th MHV amplitude, 19,404. Okay, that's right, too. I happen to know these numbers. If you go to the 20-point end of the 8th MHV amplitude, there are 34,763,300 terms, which is a lot. But it's worth remembering that the Feynman diagram says 10 to the 22 terms for the 20-point amplitude. So 10 to the 22 is a lot bigger than 34 million. And I think my computer can handle 34 million, but probably not 10 to the 22. Okay, so we have all of the, so we now have all the partitions, and we just want to implement this recursion. And we're going to do it in two steps. The first one is completely structural, which is the bridge. So notice that although it's really tempting to think of this of these amplitudes as being ordered in some way, of having z1 through zn, as soon as we put it in the recursion, notice that we're going to pick up arguments that are hatted, and we're going to shift the labels from 1 to n to j to n, you know, to and from 1 to j. And so what we really want is we want to have a bridge which acts on an arbitrary set of arguments and then does the recursion for that arbitrary set. And so let's see what we want. Let's do so we want something of the following form. BCFW bridge for some n left and some k left and some n right and some k right. And then some labels. Let's say twister labels. Okay, so those are the arguments of this function. And I'm going to wrap everything in a block because I don't like defining global variables that are going to disappear. And so what do we want? We're going to have to define j hat and n hat. So we need to give those things definitions. And we're also going to need to talk about the left amplitude range. So let's see, left label range and right label range. And if we didn't have the hats involved, these ranges are actually really simple. So like the left label range is just the twister labels, just from 1 up to n left. Okay, simple. Now, of course, we have to hat the last guy, so we'll have to fix this in a moment. But it's almost there. And then the right label range starts off as just twister labels, which I spelled wrong. Okay. By the way, I mean, this was something I guess has been used several times already in lecture, but it wasn't explicitly discussed. It was just explicitly discussed. The double semicolon tells you it's a range from 1 through NL. We could have also just fed in, by the way, range 1 through NL. That would have been fine, too. But for the next one, it's going to be, you'll see why I like the 1 to NL instead. So for this one, we want to start from NL minus 1. And we want to go up to the last thing in the list, whatever that is. The last thing in the list has a nice address. It's just minus 1. So we want to go from n left minus 1 all the way up to minus 1, the last thing in the list. Okay, so we're almost there. Let's see what this function was going to look like. So if we just had a left, so a k left at left label range, and then we have to put some r in there, but let's do that in a moment. So k right. And then right label range. Okay, we've defined it. So BCFW bridge. Let's say the one of the terms in the let's look at the 8-point n squared MHV. It's one of my favorites. Okay, so 6-1 and 4-0. 6-1, 4-0, and it's going to be eight point. So let's put in the label range, just you know those things. Okay, so we did what we wanted. We have the 6-point on the left, which has got the arguments 1 through 6, and the 4-point on the right, 5 through 8. By the way, it's always really good to, like, you know, evaluate these functions on random input, on convenient input to just make sure that you've got the ranges correct and things like that, even while you're building the function. And, of course, we're missing the R and we're missing the hats, but those are easy to fix. So let's do the R first because it's, like, the easiest. So R, we're going to put on its arguments are twister labels, 5 of them. And it's the first one, n left minus 1, n left. So it's 1, n left minus 1, n left. And then minus 2 and minus 1, which are the second to last one and the last one, whatever those are. And now if we just reevaluate this again, we see that we picked up that extra R. So the R, 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, which is great, which is what it should be. So now all we're missing are the hats. And the hats we can take care of right now. So let's say, so there are a lot of ways of doing this. And I think so let me introduce the following notation, which is motivated the following, well. When I first was doing this, this thing, if you write it in LaTeX, is cap, you know, it's slash cap. So let's define some as yet undefined function. Let's just, you know, say cap, whatever things occur on either side of the intersection. We'll see that there's a completely general solution to any cap product. So if you have a twister defined in terms of intersections, it's just trivially expandable. So this will be a very convenient way of packaging the data. But let's just do it for now while we, until we know how to do the cap. It doesn't really make any difference because, you know, we'll figure it out later. Okay, so the first thing is j, j plus 1, or j, j minus 1, which is n left minus, I don't know why I use j and n, okay, anyway, sorry about that. N left. And then that's the line that's going to intersect it. And then the plane is twister labels minus 2, or minus 1, minus 2 for n. Well, I guess I do want to, let's do it the same way. This doesn't make any difference because geometrically it doesn't make any difference, right? The plane is the same however you order it. And so it's a line. And sine can't matter because it's dual superconformal invariant. So that's just a rescaling. So geometrically this thing is completely well defined however I order things. You'll see that if you do the last problem set, the last exercise from question 2, it does pay to be a little clever about this, but it doesn't pay that much, so it's not a big deal. So n hat, basically the same thing, cap, twister labels, and now it's going to be minus 1, minus 2, okay, and then twister labels. Say n left minus, well, n left minus 1. I guess I like them decreasing instead of increasing. That doesn't look decreasing, but it is. Okay, so these are our hatted variables. And we just want to surgically replace the last item in the first in the left label range and the first and last item in the right label range. That's all we need to do. So let's do left label range is equal to replace part. Left label range. So if you don't know about replace part, you should spend some time with the documentation center. It's a great thing to be familiar with. And so what it does is it will just take, you'll surgically replace some element at some level in the expression. So in particular, if we do minus 1, we can send minus 1 to j hat. And that's going to replace the last thing in it. Well, let's see how that would work. So like range 10, we can do replace part minus 1 goes to, you know, alpha or something. Okay, so it just replaced it. If we did minus second 1, it would have done the second to last 1. Okay, so it behaves pretty nicely. And then right label range, replace part. We need to replace two things. We need to replace 1 with j hat, the same thing, and then we'll do minus 1 with n hat. Okay, so now we're like done. The whole bridge is defined. So let's see how that looks. Good. Just because, I'm not sure about efficiency. For me, it's about I think about 80% of the time I do what you just said. I don't know, I mean, replace part, I don't know. It's stochastic for me. I would tend to do what you suggested. So, yeah. Sure. But remember that it's only doing the replacements for each term in the partition, which is relatively, it's definitely not the biggest, it's not the factorial you've got to worry about in the recursion. So, yeah, the 34 million is going to still be there. That's going to be the bigger problem if you care about those kind of things. I'll come back later. Tomorrow, either today or tomorrow, there are some really nice ways of making this pretty, you know, print in a nice way with the intersection and stuff, which is what I like to do, but aesthetics aren't important for us at the moment. But we just notice that it is doing the right thing. So it put the bridge exactly where we wanted it. It's got the right arguments. And A0, so it's an NMHV four-point function with 5-hatted and 8-hatted. Of course, all of this stuff is irrelevant because it's an MHV amplitude, which means it's just 1. So this thing should just, you know, we should tell Mathematica that this thing is 1 and get rid of it. And this one is not This is a 6-point NMHV with this extra hatted variable. So it's like the R invariants that we saw already. We already know the formula for the NMHV amplitudes, but it's got this hatted variable instead. We'll see that this adds no complications. It just adds a little, you just have to add one little expansion bit when we understand the geometry. But okay, so we've got the bridge working. So let's go on to the next step, which is the recursion. So BCFW recursion as a replacement rule. So this is not the most efficient way, although it is, I think I might have promised 10,000 times faster. This is a slightly, we're not going to cache anything in this. It still turns out to be about 100 times faster or better than that, than what I've got in BCFW package, but it's respectable. But you could easily improve this in a nice way. But I think this is most transparent. So the idea is that we want to come up with a replacement rule that every time it sees something like A with some K and some label range, that it's going to, you know, tell it what it is, or it's going to BCFW expand it if it can. So so there's a nice function called which, which is like if with multiple ifs. So which works, let's look up which. So which does test 1, value 1, test 2, value 2, test 3, value 3. It just gives you a bunch of if-thens. And it always evaluates to the first one it finds. That's true. This means, by the way, that which always needs to have an even number of arguments, which is one of my most common bugs. So I forget to usually include the last one. But let's say, so if k equals 0, then A, we just want to turn it into 1. We want to get rid of it, right? And if k is greater than n minus 4, we haven't defined what n is, but we'll take care of that in a moment. If it's greater than n minus 4, it's 0, because it's worse than MHV bar. And otherwise, we want to do this bridging thing. And so that means the last condition is just true. True works fine. You know, that's always true. And so then we're going to put in this rule, which is A, same K, evaluated at label range 1 up to minus 2, so dropping off the last argument, plus something involving this bridge. So let's see how this might work. So let's look at the BCFW partitions. This is going to be what we need to feed into it, right? Let's look at 8.2 n squared MHV 8-point. And again, let's just look at one of the terms in the bridge. So we want to have something that's like bridge. So we want bridge to act like that with first arguments. That's the way we set it up. So bridge's first arguments are these two pairs of things. I'm going to get rid of that and put in, we can be a little bit more efficient. So if we just use the triple at symbol, we get bridge evaluated for each of those pairs. But it's not quite the right form because we also need to keep track of these twister labels. You know, it's not just enough to know what the n left and n right are. You need to know what things there are functions of. And so the way to do that is we want to make bridge a function of arbitrarily many arguments, two or more, which is what the double pound sign means, and then ampersand. So now it's exactly the same thing. I haven't changed anything. But what this extra structure is allowing me to do is allowing me to add something, so twister labels. Okay? So now bridge is going to hit every single thing in BCFW partitions, and it's going, and let's put it all in one line, get rid of the reference to the line above. Okay, so bridge is going to act on everything just like the way we want it to. And of course, what we want to do is we want to do this, and then we want to total all. If I get rid of the one cardinal, then what happens is, good. So if I just have the single ampersand sign, this stands in for one, a slot. It's like the single underscore. And I could have set this up differently, but I set it up so that the first square bracket in BCFW bridge has two arguments. So I can't use a single slot. I need to use two slots. And so this is like the double underscore that we've seen a lot of already. But it's an arbitrary function of multiple slots. We could have also done this. We could have said 1 and 2. That would have worked just as well. But if we just do the double thing, it's like arbitrary many. So it's it saves you the time of writing 1 and 2. Sorry about that. Okay, so we have this, and we want a total over all of those. Good. I think we've got everything we need. So we're going to put this into our recursion. We've got that plus sign waiting for its hanging partner. And the twister labels in this case are label range. Okay. And this is N, whatever that is, and K. And bridge is, of course, BCFW bridge. I didn't, you know. Okay, so that's the BCFW bridge. Now, the only thing that's missing to make this complete is to define what N is. But N is simple. It's just the length of the labels, label range. So we can put that in for N. And now we've got it. That's the BCFW recursion. And unless I made a typo, which is possible, this should work. So let's even define it. Let's call it this replacement rule, BCFW recurse. Is that? And then let's see what happens. Let's do like A2, the 8-point N squared MHP is my favorite, so let's do that. So this is, let's say we had some amplitude of that form, some totally abstract thing, and I'm going to now BCFW recurse it. It broke it up into a bunch of stuff. Great. And now notice that a lot of these things, it broke it up into a bunch of stuff which are going to turn into ones, and also things that can be further recursed, like this A1, with a bunch of arguments. It's some 7-point amplitude. So what we really want to do is repeated replace. So we want to just keep applying the BCFW recursion until you stop, which means you get rid of all the A's, and you trade it all for R's. So let's expand this so we can see what the terms look like. And that's it. Let's see how long it is. Make sure it's the thing is what we want. So there are the 20 terms. And we'll check when we do some numerical evaluations if this agrees with the formula, what you can obtain in publicly available packages. And we'll see a very, very efficient way of converting these R's into functions. In fact, you've already kind of done it. In Pedro's talk, you worked out how to extract components from a single R. Adding multiple R's is just like adding multiple rows to this supersymmetric delta function. Each one is a separate delta function. So every R is its own supersymmetric delta function. So because it's K equals 2, it's the N squared MHV, there are two R's in every term. And if we did the 8-point N cubed MHV, we'd get, three R's in every term. And it's a thing of length 10. It looks kind of like a mess, but it's really just the parity conjugate of that thing, which is not so bad. Notice, by the way, that this looks exactly like the formula that, was, has been presented many times for the NMHV amplitudes. It's 1, and then II plus 1, JJ plus 1 is just summing over all of them. In this case, it's summing over all of them just because of the ranges, N right and left. That's it. It's worth noting. So in the II plus 1, JJ plus 1, the only terms that come from the bridge are just the terms that involve N minus 1, N. Everything else comes from just the lower point NMHV amplitude, untouched. So for the 5-point amplitude, it's just R 1 through 5, because it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then for the 6-point, it's the 5-point amplitude all by itself, and then it's 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, and 1, 3, 4, 5, 6. And those are the two new terms you get here. And in NMHV, at every single stage, for N, you get N minus 4 new terms above the old ones. So it's not so bad. It also means that when you evaluate these things numerically, they tend to be very fast because they get reused all the time as you go. So before we check how fast it is and things like that, let's put it all together in a nice form. So let's do tree amp for N and K. By nice form, I just mean one without a sum and things. It'll be useful later for us to have access to every single term separately. So we might want to do something like expand A, K, range N, BCFW recurse. And that's pretty good, and we can put a list over it. Can anybody anticipate what's going to go wrong with this? But it kind of works. So 6, 1, it's the three terms that we know and love. Column, let's do that. If we look at 7-1, we get that. If we look at 7-2, the parity conjugate of 7-1, we get some hatted variables and stuff. No problem. We look at 8-2. Okay, it works. Can anybody anticipate what's going to be what where I've overlooked a potential problem? Well, so this list at on the expand is replacing the head of whatever expression you see. And that means that when I put in 5, 1, for example, I just get, see what happened was that 5, 1 was not a sum. So there wasn't a total or plus on the outside to replace the head with. And that means that it chopped off the R and put a list on it. That's not what I want. So we can fix that with a really easy local form function. So we can say if head of the expression is a plus, then do this list business. Otherwise, just wrap it in a parenthesis, in a list thing. And now we see that it's doing what we want. So the 5-point MHV amplitude is now a list of one R invariant. And the 6-point and everything else is fine. So it didn't change anything else. And we're done. And we say now we can do timing, which we saw in one of the exercises. Tree amp 12, 4. So the 12-point end of the 4th MHV amplitude, see how long this takes. And okay, so it takes about a third of a second, which is a lot better than the 45 seconds that it takes the BCFW package to do, for example. Now, it's worth noting that the BCFW package is doing a lot of, bracket algebra. That's no excuse. This is much more efficient. And the bracket algebra is unnecessary because, the real key here is that these caps, these intersections, are automatically manifestly dual superconformal invariant. So you don't need to expand them in any canonical way. You don't need to care about little group weight. These things are all little group neutral. Everything here is just, completely symmetric. You can treat them however you'd like at the end. And because of that, you can avoid all sorts of algebraic simplifications as you go. That's why it's faster. The reason why it's about 100 times slower than what you could get is because, as you notice, we haven't made use of anything that remembers anything. We're not using the 8-point n squared MHV amplitude every time we see it. Instead, we're reevaluating it from scratch every single time. So we're not making any use of recursive, of caching as we go. It's kind of nice that it still gets up to, a third of a second for the 12-point end of the 4th MHV amplitude, but it could be much better. Unfortunately, I don't know how to do that. It's definitely a medium to difficult exercise, and it would have taken me an extra 10 minutes to go through it. But it's definitely possible, and you'll get another factor of 100. Which is kind of some nice bonus. And so do I have how much time? Oh, perfect. Perfect. So I can tell you what these hats are and my favorite theorem in projective geometry. Because it's the only theorem in projective, well, no, that's not quite true. It's the most useful theorem in projective geometry. Okay, so I'm going to give you just a really simple proof for Schouten identities and arbitrary dimensions. It falls under the name of Cramer's rule, usually presented in a much uglier way. But I'm going to prove the following thing, basically. That if you have, let's say you have Z1 up to Zd plus 1, where Zi are all in elements of Cd. So you just have any arbitrary d plus 1 d vectors. There's a nice way of there's an identity that they satisfy. And the really nice way of presenting it is to say that Z1 times the determinant of 2, 3 to d plus 1 minus Z2, this is a full vector, so it's full, let it be a full vector, times the determinant of 1, 3, 4, d plus 1, plus dot, 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 plus minus 1 to the d of Zd plus 1, of 1 up to d is equal to 0. So this general theorem is called Cramer's rule, and it's in special cases it's sometimes called Schouten relations or Schouten identities and things like this. There's a really easy proof, and it's a really, really useful formula. So let me prove it for you first, because it's cute. So we've got these d plus 1 d vectors. Let's make a matrix of them. Okay, so we've got, say, Z1, first component, up to Zd plus 1, first component. And then we've got Z1, the dth component, up to Zd plus 1, the dth component. Okay? So this is a big matrix, and it's a d by d plus 1 matrix. Okay? Now, obviously, if I can upgrade this to a D+1 by D+1 matrix in a really trivial way, I can just add zeros to everything up here. If I add zeros to the upper row, everyone will manifestly see this is a determinant that if I took this determinant of this matrix, this D+1 by D+1 matrix, its determinant would vanish, right? Trivially. Okay. And also, if I were to add to this row any one of the rows, you know, so if I were to make the top row, which is totally arbitrary, this determinant's going to vanish. If I made it the same as this row below it, so Z1 up to ZD+1, D+1, the first component, because these two rows are identical, the determinant's going to vanish as well. Okay. But now when you look at it this form, let's do the old high school trick that we know of, which the high school trick, you know, we take the first component up here and we multiply by the subdeterminant, right, which is saying that Z1, 1 times this determinant, which goes from 2 up to D+1, okay, and then we do this Z2, the first component, plus this first component of Z2, that's minus because it's got a signature, okay, 1, 3 to D+1. And keep going. And of course, it didn't matter which component we chose. We could have chosen any of them, so it's clearly a vector equation. Okay, so it's clearly, so QED. It's very, very nice. Now, what it allows you to do is it allows you to immediately see things like this, and I'll show you why. So this is going to take another 1 minute, 2 minutes maybe. But so let me show you the instance of this in C4 is really simple. It's basically all a variance of the following, that ZA, and it doesn't matter what A is, it doesn't matter what any of these things are, B, C, D, E, any arbitrary four vector times this determinant plus another arbitrary four vector, C, D, E, A, plus Z, C, D, E, A. I didn't put the minus signs in because I cycled the determinant, but I haven't made them sign error, so. Okay, this is correct. D, E, A, B, C, plus, oh, I really want to get this one in this line. I don't know if everybody can see that, but E, A, B, C, D. Okay, so this thing is all equal to zero. Now, because these five guys add up to zero, it means that you can solve problems like this trivially. So you want to find the line that's on where the line JJ plus 1, or let's say the line AB, intersects the plane CDE, any plane CDE, take the equal sign and move it over here and put a minus sign. Of course, they're all projective, so the minus sign is irrelevant. Right? So now we have that ZA times this plus ZB times this is equal to ZC plus ZD plus ZE times these things, right? But that is nothing but the fact that the left-hand side, because this is expanded in terms of ZA and ZB, it's along the line ZA and ZB. ZA and ZB, you know, support this point because it's, you know, it's manifestly written in terms of A and B. And it's on the plane CDE because manifestly it's, you know, expanded in terms of those plane CDE. And so just by putting in the minus sign, you know, you can put a minus sign if you want to care about it. It's never going to affect any of these, our computations. But just by moving around the equal sign, you get all these nice geometric identities. Another really trivial one, but one that's really useful, especially in high school algebra, is when you move the equal sign over here, and you learn that ZA is equal to the sum of those four Zs times those coefficients. That's really useful because it means that this is how you take an arbitrary n vector and expand it in terms of an arbitrary basis of other n vectors that are linearly independent. So if you have any, you know, d n vectors or d d vectors, and you have an extra one that you want to expand it in terms of that basis, you just do this identity. Okay, this is why Cramer's rule is usually written with you divide by something, and because it's usually described as the general solution to a linear equation of, you know, d linear equations. There's a unique solution to d linear equations in d unknowns, and Cramer's rule tells you the solution to that. But it also allows you to trivially find unique solutions to things like any of these linear constraint problems like this. If we were in higher dimensions, we'd have all sorts, we would get, you know, we could have 3 and 4 or something in 7 dimensions or 6 dimensions. Okay, so the next time, just to wrap up, so this thing works, it's very nice, and these formulas I'm pretty sure are all correct. We'll check it. So next time I'll show you how to take brackets, take the R invariants involved with these hatted variables, and expand them in terms of ordinary variables. So you can just evaluate them with ordinary determinants of the ordinary external Zs. And also how to get the analytic formulas out of the Rs, basically. That's a little bit harder than the recursion, but it's also probably more useful. Okay, so thank you very much.
Questions? Okay, so what is this R?
R is this this unique dual superconformal invariant involving five guys. So it made an appearance in several lectures already. It's okay. The thing with the four brackets downstairs and the delta of 0/4 in the numerator.
Okay.
Well, I'll review it. I'll make sure the notebook's available so you can, you know, hack it and do whatever, and you know, make it more aesthetically appealing.
Okay, so numerically, how many can you do?
Oh, lots. I mean, it depends what you, if you want NMHV, hundreds. I mean, that's not a problem. Okay. But end of the fourth MHV, 20 points is pretty hard.
So, okay, let's speak again.